Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Mpuga. This evening, we'll talk about upcoming elections in Africa in 2016. With us tonight is Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst. He joins us from Durban, South Africa, as usual. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas and the listeners. Thank
you for being on the show. And joining us from Dallas, Texas, is Hussein Kiflu. Kiflu is an Ethiopian social and political commentator. He's a research assistant at the Southern Methodist University. He joins us by phone also. Good morning, Kiflu.
Good morning, Dallas, and good evening, Suleiman.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you for being on the show. As I said, we're going to talk about upcoming elections in the year 2016 in Africa. 2015 was a year that had some surprises, but let me begin with the Kiflu first. General perception, general view of what's coming in the next year as far as elections are concerned.
As far as elections are concerned, sorry to say, once again, the future is bleak, except one hopeful sign coming from Nigeria. Nigeria, as you remember, they had their election recently. And so the opposition, I think his name is Buhari, the current president. So he won the election, and his predecessor, Jonathan Goodluck, accepted the defeat graciously and stepped down. Mm-hmm. So that is a hopeful sign. That is only glimmer of hope we have right now. But otherwise, as you know, Paul Kagame of Rwanda is manipulating. Manipulating the public, the so-called parliament, to bend the constitution and become a lifelong president. As his colleague nearby, President Yoweri Museveni, had done. So, and then there is Burundi. Burundi, the way he got elected, it was a bloody mess. So he clung to power, and now Burundi is no longer stable. It's on the brink of the civil war or genocide once again. So overall, it's so bleak.
I see.
So tragic.
Yes, Suleiman Kiflu there mentions what happened in 2015. The 2016, we have elections, say, in Uganda coming up in February. We expect elections in DRC. We expect elections in Congo. Rwanda, of course, the president got a nod for third term and two more terms, actually, virtually making him eligible to be president up to 2034. So what's the general outlook in 2016 for these elections?
Generally speaking, I don't think the picture will be different from 2015. It's a general mixed picture that one step forward, two step backwards. We have got a mixed package. We have got some countries which are expected to increase from what they have done, where there is some democracy, Zambia, Nigeria, as my brother said, the parliamentary elections, we don't expect much. Ghana, not expect much. Then we have the usual dictatorial regimes, which are a surprise, which we expect to perform, to do what the Burundians have done, to do what the Rwandese are doing. Those are cases, for example, Uganda in February, Benin, they have accepted the Boni Yayi is going to step down. His party has nominated the prime minister, who happens to be of dual nationality, who happened to be a Franco-Beninese. But that one, it doesn't have very big opponents. So that one, we expect a smooth election. It will depend upon the Beninois to decide what they want. Then you have got our friend Equatorial Guinea. Of course, it is expected he's still there after so many years. A lot of corruption ranked among the 12 most corrupt countries by Transparency International. ranked 144 in the UN Human Development Index, yet amongst the richest mm-hmm. on the continent. So that one, we expect him to continue. There is no hope for change. There is no hope for change in Ghana, in Chad. And then DRC and Uganda are the most contentious, which we have to look at. DRC, Uganda, and Congo.
I see. Chifulu, now let's go to country by country. An election in a country like DRC, Suleiman just mentioned, putting aside the fact that the President Kabila wants to tinker with the constitution and have another term, is the election there really worth the reflection of what the people really want?
Will you repeat that question again?
What I'm saying is, despite the fact that in DRC, for instance, in DR Congo, the president wants to tinker with the constitution and get another term, is there a way that they can organize an election there that would reflect the will of the people?
No, I would say not at all, because it's going to be everything is going to be controlled by the incumbent, orchestrated by the incumbent, you know, the so-called election commission. I don't know what they call it in DRC. It won't be impartial. So it is the usual deception we're going to be seeing in Africa. And while I'm at this point, you know, I forgot about my own country. I think it's also in 2015 that once again the ruling party claimed that it won 100%, you know, 100% victory during the last election. And the 100% result of that election, now we are seeing it with this, you know, with Oromo protest and all the mess that it entailed. So, it's tragic that in most sub-Saharan African countries, you know, election is still farcical. Democracy is just, you know, another word to perpetuate dictators in palaces, in state houses. So that's how things stand.
Yeah, Suleiman, this phenomenon of 100% winning, 100%, even in the Rwanda vote where they wanted to remove term limits, they could only find 10 people in the country who are opposed. Very interesting.
Yeah.
So now let's look at Uganda. Uganda has a president who has been in power almost 30 years. He removed term limits. For him, he was up front. He bribed parliament and they removed term limits. And he's in an election now. He's a man on record who has contempt for his opponents, who says he fought, therefore he ought to be the leader. There are those who argue then, in that case, why bother even going for an election?
Sincerely speaking, you know, I think what we need to look at is that, number one, he has stayed for close to 30 years. He ushered in a new group of young dictators who have grown in power, who have tested power, who have found power very sweet and now cannot vacate. So long as he returns to power in Uganda, Kagame will remain there. So long as Museveni returns to power in Uganda, Salva Kiir wants to remain. Nkurunziza wants to remain. The man in DRC wants to remain. So he's the godfather of the area. Central African Republic, Congo. The template is the same. In other words, so long as he stays there, there will be Musevenization of the region. So that is number one. Number two, we are sure by his methods that over the 30 years, he has been playing the cards the way other dictators do. He's not willing at all to leave power. The biggest question in all these countries and in all the region is it worth for him to return? Will the country benefit The answer is no. There is a lot of poverty. There is a lot of corruption. There is a lot of unemployment. There is a lot of inequality. There is a lot of infrastructure decay and absence of infrastructure. So, in other words, much as they want to come back to power, the question is it worth for them to come back to the power? And do the people want them to come back to power? The question in Uganda is very clear. If you are following the campaigns that are going on, I think the people have spoken. They are attending opposition rallies in bigger numbers to show their disgust with the current regime, to show their discontent as far as the current regime is concerned. So much as he wants to put up a facade of an election, much as he wants to cheat and go back to power, but I think it will not be good for the country and even for himself.
Kifulu, further to Suleiman's point, yeah. You may have crowds, opposition rallies, you may have even people who feel that the opposition has enough support, but then with lack of institutions, where the police, the army are all for the current, the incumbent, and the electoral commission, so-called, is not independent, they determine the results, where they get 99% or 100%.
No, they don't determine the results. Suleiman said the public has already spoken. You know, I've been following the upcoming election in Uganda, and since I lived in Uganda, since Uganda is my second home, and I lived in Uganda for 7 years, I know what has been going on there. And now when I'm following up matters from a distance, and when I see, you know, the crowds following the opposition figures like Dr. Kizza Besigye, this time, I don't know why, I sense different dynamics. I don't think it's going to be business as usual for the incumbent, for Museveni. And what I'm afraid, I think the people seems to be determined. I don't think the people, the Ugandans, would be, you know, would keep quiet, you know, after their votes have been stolen like before. I sense, this, you know, a different determination. So what I'm afraid is the incumbent, you know, wants to cling to power, and the people are determined this time. And these, you know, selfish dictators, we see almost all over Africa, you know, in the region, in Ethiopia, in Uganda, in Rwanda, they may take us, you know, to the path of destruction. So these people are, you know, they want to cling to power. They know what they have done. They have committed a lot of crimes. They have embezzled, you know, literally lost their country. So they are afraid. Even if you give them guarantee that you will not be touched, you will not be, you know,
prosecuted,
because they have this guilty conscience. So they would want to cling to power, come what may.
So
that's what we have to think about. How can we avoid that destruction and at the same time remove these dictators?
I see. Yeah. Suleiman, that's a tricky balancing act where there are those who call for people power, meaning that if the opposition has won, they should actually claim their victory.
You see, what is lacking now is the collective from the regional government, regional organization, international organization, international governments and the donors to be firm the way U.S. is trying to be firm on Rwanda. Because at the end of the day, the country and the people are the losers. Once chaos erupts, it is the people and the country. The little that he has achieved, all goes down the drain. Remember, for example, when Egypt got the revolution, there was a lot of destruction. Buildings were burned. And we had the Burkina Faso falling, the party headquarters, the government buildings, they were banned. So many institutions they are destroyed because of the changes that come. Today, Museveni might say he has achieved a lot. Today, Kagame might say he has achieved a lot. But if he's forcefully overthrown by people's power, there will be a lot of destruction, and there will be the destruction even of that little which he has done, and the country sometimes breaks down. You find that there is a vacuum of leadership because of that. So without a transition, without a peaceful transition, we are heading for a destruction of the country. That's why I'm saying the most important thing is that as the people force these leaders to leave office, as we call for people's power to take control, we should also try to appeal to the international community and the regional organizations to try to convince, to talk to these leaders to be able to leave power peacefully before a lot of destruction of life and property is done.
Well, okay, let's take a short break. We'll be back again to continue a discussion of upcoming elections in Africa in 2016. Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America series here in Washington. Our topic tonight is upcoming elections in Africa in the year 2016. Our panelists are Hussein Kiflu, social and political commentator and a research associate at the Southern Methodist University, and Suleiman Mugula, a South African-based independent political analyst, and I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 9 in Washington. Gentlemen, we looked at those problematic upcoming elections, but then there is some places where there will be genuine elections. Of course, let's begin in South Africa, your country there. You won't have a presidential general election, but you have municipal elections, where the parties will be trying to wrestle power for municipal control. So there, at least people will speak. They will speak what they want.
In South Africa here, for us, we are lucky. The legacy left by our founding father, Mandela, the institutions are very neutral. The Electoral Commission is very strong. The security institutions like the police, like the municipal officials, the municipal security organization, provincial security organization, every institution is firm. The election cannot be rigged. The people say whatever they want and they choose whatever they want. What is controversial and what makes them so important is that they gauge the municipal election, they gauge the strength of the ruling party, because without the ruling party winning all these municipal elections, it cannot carry on good service delivery, because the municipal leaders are at the peak of the service delivery campaign.
I see. Kifulu, there is neighboring South Africa. They have an election also in 2016. The previous general election in 2011 was won by the Patriotic Front, whose candidate Michael Sata was elected, and then following Sata's death in 2014, early presidential elections were held to elect a successor for the remainder of his 5-year term, and Edgar Lungu was elected. Now Edgar Lungu is going to be facing off the candidate for the UPND, led by Hakainde Hichilema. So, but Zambia, Kifulu, has had at least a record of having peaceful transition.
Recently, I haven't followed up the politics of Zambia, but I know that they have had a history of peaceful election and peaceful transfer of power. Mm. And the last corrupt leader they had, if memory serves me right, was Frederick Chiluba. Mm-hmm. So there is also hope there. At least they have opened, the door for free dialogue and free peaceful election and peaceful transfer of power. So I take that as a hopeful sign, albeit it's only, it's in few places in sub-Saharan Africa.
Suleiman.
Yeah, no, that one, the Zambian election, the systems, it is all systems go. It is the people to decide whom they want to lead. If Lungu convinces the masses, he will take over. It is an open game. We don't have any problem. There is no intimidation. There is no ballot stuffing. There is no security intimidating people. There is no electoral commission which is biased. The Zambian people, Zambia is a democratic state. It's one of the few good examples on the continent, and we're expecting good elections from them. We don't expect any violence. We don't expect any bad contention within the country.
So, gentlemen, but what seems to be running through all this conversation, if you look in the few countries in sub-Saharan Africa that are democratic, or at least are trying their best to be, the issue of term limits holds supreme, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. In the case of Ethiopia, you know, for someone who is who doesn't have deep knowledge of Ethiopia, who is not well informed, the ruling party may try to fool you that we have term limits, and they may tell you that the president cannot be president for beyond 2 terms. But that is a hogwash, because the president has no power. The real power resides in the prime minister. There is no term limit for the prime minister, and but the current prime minister, of course, he doesn't have power. It is the within the ruling party there is another group that's called Tigray People Liberation Front. It came from a minority ethnic group. Those are the ones who run the show. So there is no term limit in Ethiopia too, and whether an individual or a group of individuals from a minority ethnic clique, they run roughshod with the majority of Ethiopians.
So I see, Suleiman, there are those type of setups like Ethiopia, where it's a misnomer to call it a party. It's a group of people who use the label of that party to control power. The same thing is similar sort of in Uganda, where you say what came as NRA became NRM. It used to be a movement, it's a party, it's between a political party and an organization. You can't even define it. But all it means, it's the president and a small group of people who have power. Same thing with RPF, where you can't tell what it is.
The bottom line, Douglas, is that, call it what you may, but the bottom line is that change is good for a country. Transparent, inclusive, democratic leadership leads to success. It helps the country. It energizes the country. Change of power means unleashing new energy in the country. It means the change of the systems. It is never the same. We have just seen the change in Tanzania, much as it is within the party, but the change is very, very important because it brings it new energy. It sometimes brings in a change of direction. Look at the countries like Uganda, like Rwanda. Look, Rwanda is credited to that Kagame has done. What a lot has he done? If you go outside Kigali, people are still poor. That is a very small country. It has got a lot of aid. If it was led transparently and inclusively, it would do a better job than what he has done. What gauge are we using to say Kagame has done a lot? What gauge are we using to say Kabila has done a lot? What gauge are we using to say Museveni has done a lot, therefore should go there more? The only parameter which you can use is having a transparent and democratic system where a leader's account is put to account for what he has done. Like now, the way in that simple little democracy which is within Uganda, Museveni has been exposed. The politicians have visited hospitals which have never had doctors for 2 years. They have visited hospitals where there are no beds. They have visited the places, the roads they cannot go through the country. He has been exposed. So whenever you have democracy, whenever you have a change of leadership, you have the capability, the probability of growing the country. That is the international norm. That is what has happened in developing countries. That is what is happening elsewhere. There is no need for a few countries and a few people out of selfishness and greed to convince their citizens that they are so good and so indispensable. Instead, they are making the countries rot.
Okay, as we're running out of time a little bit, Kifulu, some people have argued that the people themselves, it's incumbent upon the citizens to force change in their countries and get good governance, get democratic institutions. Others have said international community has a role and it can lean on some of these leaders to move in the right directions. What's your take, briefly?
It's a little of both. Of course, mainly it is the people's responsibility to determine their own fate, to bring change. But at the same time, the international community can also do a lot. You know, when they pop up egregious dictators like the Ethiopian one, like Museveni, it will retard change. It will hamper the people's struggle, the people's aspiration to achieve democracy. So it's a little of both. Mainly, it's the responsibility of the people themselves. And ultimately, they would do it. We have seen in history that despite Western support to dictators, that change has been brought about, and it will continue to do so. So it's a little of both. That's my take on.
Suleiman, briefly, as last word.
You know, in 2006, Condoleezza Rice said, "Obiang is a good friend of America." And as a result, you find that Obiang was getting a lot of help from the Americans. So is Museveni. So is Ethiopia. It's a very big force. But much as the people try internally, so long as the leadership is very resourced with the donor money, with the country with a lot of moral and financial support from international community, the people are left with little to do. That is why eventually when they overrun them, it is violent.
Yes.
So I think the international community has to do a lot to help the African country to withdraw their support to these dictators. Because at the end of the day, however much money they pour into this country, it will go down the drain. The more they stay, the more corrupt they become, the more repressive they become, and the more destruction is going to happen when they are being overthrown.
Well, we shall keep an our eye this new year to see how elections come out. Maybe, who knows? Strange things happen. Some elections can turn out positively. Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Hussein Kifulu, an Ethiopian social and political commentator, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. Our producer was Jackson Mfunganyi. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any part of this program, you can access it by going to our main website, click on Programs, and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in, and until next week, I'm your host Douglas Mpoga in Washington, wishing you all the best.
Africa, this is James Brotte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on The Voice of America.